Welcome to Adventures in Real Estate. Darwin German has been an active real estate investor for over 30 years. He has bought, sold, managed, and owned over $400 million of real estate that includes homes, office, commercial, industrial, development, and apartments. He brings to you stories and interviews with partners and professionals to teach and educate you through actual real-life experiences. This is Adventures in Real Estate.
She said a requirement in the contract was that I keep feeding the stray cats. This is Darwin German with another episode of Adventures in Real Estate. And we're going to talk about a crazy contract stipulation to be able to buy a deal. I get this call from a friend of mine. He's a commercial broker. His name is David Tuttle. He's with KW Commercial now. And he said, hey, I've got a client. They have an apartment property. They want to look at converting that over, tearing it down and building an office building. But it's an apartment right now. So I want you to come to the meeting to talk to them with me. So we go to this meeting and I meet with this family. They own a business next door, a very highly successful business. And their father, who started the business, actually bought the apartment complex next door because they needed additional parking. So this property that they owned free and clear had never made any money. It just broke even. They weren't really trying to manage it to make money. They had a manager in there that was a friend of a friend, and they were just spending money and doing whatever they wanted. No debt. They weren't getting any cash flow off the property. But now the father had passed away. They had inherited it and just kept on running it the way that it had been run. And they were looking at doing something to make money off of it. So I go in there and David and I meet with them, and they tell me the story and everything. And we start looking at what it would take to build an office building and running all the numbers and coming up with all that, and determine that no, the highest and best use is to keep that property as an apartment complex. Well, they don't know exactly what they want to do with it. They don't know how they're doing it. And the daughter is, you know, she wants to make something of it. And I make them an offer. I say, look, in 90 days, I can go in there and I can create $1 million in value on that property. And they say, well, that sounds interesting. How would you do it? And I told them part of what I would do. And she basically said, well, I'm sure I can do that on my own. I said, okay, great. Well, still, I can create $1 million in value in 90 days. And they said, well, what would you want for that? And I said, I just want 20% of the upside. Whatever I increase the value of the property, I want 20% of. And they basically said, well, that's way too much money. And we can do it ourselves. So she goes in there, she starts doing it herself. And about every 90 to 120 days, I'm checking in on them and you know, saying, hey, you sure you don't want to do this? She'd pick my brain a little bit and give her some more information. And she was managing it as if it was her house. And she has a, you know, very exquisite taste, very classy lady, and trying to take this C quality property and make it like she lives there. Well, again, still no cash flow, no additional value created in that property. I'm saying again, look, give me 20% of the upside. I will increase the value of this property dramatically, very fast. Still no, no, no. Well, we go through this for about 2 years, I would say. This same song and dance. With every 3 to 4 months, I'm talking to her again, giving her some more tips on what to do, how to do it, things like that. They're still not making any money on the property, even though they're debt-free. They should be making a fortune. And still not making any progress. Finally, I say, forget it. I will buy the property. I will give you this amount of money for the property. And it was a very good offer for them. So they decided to go ahead and take the deal. However, we were negotiating the contract, and there were some very strange stipulations. One is that we had to reserve those parking spots so they could still use a certain strip of the parking for their employees. Okay, I can live with that. No big deal. The next one, they said, we want to retain some ownership in this property. So we see what you're doing, how you're doing it. And besides, if you're going to create all this upside, we want part of it. I said, okay, I can still live with that. I can modify that. Then they also said, oh, and we want more money than you're offering. And I ran the numbers, said, okay, well, you know what? I can still deal with that. And then the final stipulation was that we had to keep on feeding the stray cats that lived on the property. And for those of you who know, those are not great things to have. You don't want strays living on your property. However, she was an animal lover. The manager who was managing it had her dogs and cat in the office, brought with her every day up to the office. And I can appreciate animal lovers. We've got two cats and a dog ourselves, and they're, you know, pretty much part of the family anyway. However, requiring that we keep on feeding stray cats, which, by the way, stray cats have more stray cats, and keep on feeding them, which will attract even more strays, was going to cause a problem. But quite honestly, I wanted the property. I understood that, hey, this is what she wants. Her office is right next door. They're going to see it. This is what they want. That's perfectly fine. I can live with that because of this deal. So we end up buying this property. They keep part of the ownership. We feed the stray cats and we take care of that property. This property ends up being one of the top three or four properties that we have invested in. In about 90 days after I bought the property, we had increased the value by almost $1 million. We put together a syndication to buy it. We invited preferred partners only, and those were people that invested in numerous deals with us because it was a small capital raise and a smaller deal. We bought that. The current owner stayed in as partners. We bought the property, increased the value of the property in 90 days by $1 million. We waited a year because then we could do a cash out refi. Refinanced it, pulled out over 60% of our original cash out of that deal. So that refinance is cash back, tax-free, tax-deferred if we want to be completely realistic. But that money comes out without being taxed in that year and still have a tremendous cash flow. Now, 2 years after that, now we have put that property on the market. It's for sale. And we're projecting that that property is going to have a 60 to 70% per year average return. So even though we had some crazy stipulations, things that could have killed the deal with, no, I'm not going to feed the cats, leaving that in there and dealing with those stipulations, we still ended up with an absolutely tremendous investment and made our investors a lot of money, and they are thrilled. So it's a great investment for our partners, great investment overall, and all because we agreed to feed the cats. So that's one of our adventures in real estate and dealing with different stipulations in contracts. The seller wrote across the contract that was my offer, kiss my ass. One of the first properties I bought early in my career of buying properties is a house, a vacant lot, and two fourplexes. Now, this was back in the early 90s. I made an offer on a property. Now, back in that time, which is completely different right now, if you were making a lowball offer, if you weren't embarrassed by your offer, then you were offering too much. Well, I made a lowball offer on this. It was a house, a vacant lot, and two fourplexes that were for sale. Made an offer on it. It was, I want to say, $90,000, and wrote it up in a contract. I attached a check and sent it over to the agent, and the agent sent it over to the seller. And the seller replied in a big black Sharpie scrawled across the front, kiss my ass, and sent it back to me. Well, I guess my offer was a little bit too low for him. However, I said, okay, Now, one of my negotiating tactics, one of the rules I have in negotiating is the one with the most to lose does. So basically, if he needed to sell, I didn't need to buy, then I'd get a better deal. If I had to buy and he didn't have to sell, I'd get a bad deal. So he wrote, "Kiss my ass" across the front of it and sent it back. I said, oh, well, no big deal. About 2 weeks later, the broker calls me back and says, by the way, is that offer still good? And I said, yeah, sure. I'll still pay that for it. He said, okay, good. The seller's reconsidered and he'll take your offer. This was a property referred to as Wheatland Vineyard, because it was on Wheatland and on Vineyard. It was a house, a vacant lot, and two fourplexes. Now, I bought it. 2 weeks after I closed on it, the two fourplexes were condemned. Now, these were in rough shape, and I knew they were in rough shape. They weren't habitable. However, they were two fourplexes. The lot was a corner lot, and the house next door was just a nice little 60s frame house. Well, the two fourplexes got condemned, and I went, oh, crap. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? These are now condemned. It's going to be completely worthless. So I tried for about 2 weeks to just dump them. I don't care if I lost a little bit of money, something like that. And I couldn't find a buyer, which is why the seller ended up taking my offer. He knew what was coming. And I said, wait a minute, Darwin, don't be a dork. I know what to do on this. I said, I can make these things great. So this is actually a little bit of a longer story because there's a whole lot involved here. Well, first thing I did is I started on the house. I thought, I'm going to fix up this house and sell it, make some money on it so that I can go ahead and invest it into the fourplexes. No problem. I started working on the house. We went in there, started fixing it up, cleaning it out, you know, new paint, new flooring, very nice. While working on this house, I pulled up in the driveway and pulled over onto the vacant lot, which I owned, and was working on the house. I got a ticket one day. This is no joke. I got a ticket for parking on my own lot, pulled off into the grass in my own vacant lot, and I got a ticket for, I want to say it was $240. $240 for parking on an unauthorized surface on my own lot, vacant lot, just because it wasn't on there. I was livid. You want to know the worst part about that? I was reading, because it was a little check mark box to pay the $240. One of the other check mark boxes that I could have got a ticket, no, let me rephrase that, that they issue these tickets for is for prostitution. Prostitution was only $80. So I would have been a whole lot better to be out there pimping myself out and getting the ticket than parking there on an illegal surface in my own property. That's neither here nor there. That's just a little sidebar of some of the crap you deal with. So I fix up the house and I sell the house. I put a sign up on the lot. Well, during this time, the city there was voting on whether or not to allow to start to sell alcohol. And this would be a great corner lot for a potential convenience store, package sales, liquor store, something along those lines. And an investor ended up buying that. So I took the money from both of those sales and I went back over to the fourplexes. And I looked at those and said, we can do something with this. My first inclination, obviously, was just to dump it, but it would be completely worthless. And I said, I know what to do on this. I treated this like I was building a dollhouse. I took the first fourplex and I did all of the designs myself on redesigning what this would look like as far as a new floor plan to make it more friendly, make it nicer, try and make it more like a one bedroom. Now, these were, I want to say 20 by 22. Each individual unit was 20 by 22. So 440 square feet apiece. Pretty small unit. Well, I designed how that would work. We ended up having to go in there, rip out all the sheetrock from the walls, from the ceiling, all the way down, ripped out the floors, the plywood floors. So really you walk in there and it was just a frame of a unit. Now, the city also decided that they would never allow fourplexes again in their city. So if my property were to burn down, I couldn't rebuild it with fourplexes. If I tore it down, I couldn't rebuild it. So I had to use the existing structure. Well, we tore it all the way down to the studs, all the new electrical from the transformer in, new meters, all new power on everything, all new plumbing all the way from the street, all new mechanical, new air conditioner, new water heater, new electrical, all new wiring run in there. I basically built a new house out of these fourplexes with my own design. Nice. We ended up putting, we did Formica countertops that looked like granite, washer dryer connection, stackable, refrigerator, dishwasher, had it a little more of an open floor plan, gorgeous, gorgeous designs, built a little patio off the back. So that part was great. Next thing is I started ripping the siding off of the building. The city, who didn't like me rebuilding these, they wanted them torn down, reported me to, I think it's the EPA. Who did they get reported to? I don't even remember. But bottom line is a government agency came out there and said, hey, wait a minute. These are asbestos shingles. You need to be doing proper remediation on this. And so I started looking at that going, wait a minute, that would cost a fortune doing remediation on all these things. It's just not economically viable. So again, questioning everything, looking at different options, I found out that if this were an 8-unit property, then that would be considered commercial. Well, if you have a 4-unit property, that's considered residential. And I'm thinking, if you have a house, a residential house, and you have the siding, you shouldn't have to do full-blown remediation on taking this siding off. So I started looking into the legalities of it further and found that if you own a house, you can take this siding off, package it up in airtight bags, and take it to an approved dump without having to go through the full remediation process. So I start arguing with this federal agency and the city and everybody else, saying, no, this isn't an 8-unit property. These are 2 fourplexes. These are 2 separate properties. And they were. They were deeded separately. They were 2 different lots. So I actually had to take half of those, take the fourplex, and put it into a different entity. So we had 2 different owners. So now I only owned a fourplex. That way on that fourplex, I could rip all the siding off of it, just put it in bags, and have it taken to an approved dump without having to go through the full remediation process. Now, the remediation process would have cost me $100,000. It would have been completely an economic killer. But in looking through the process to find another option, we found a way to save money on that and still be within the letter of the law. Now, there was a benefit to that, another benefit. When I finished that fourplex, I leased it up. And it was gorgeous. It was a dollhouse. Beautiful. Everything was new. New roof. Every single thing. It was like a brand new place. It was such a dollhouse that my aunt moved into one of those units. We leased it up. I had no debt on it because of paying cash originally and then paying cash for the improvements. I refinanced that, pulled cash out so that I could do the other fourplex, which was in a different entity name. I did that other fourplex and did the same thing to that. I even had a better floor plan on it, but did that, added a concrete driveway. It was dirt before then. So this place turned into an absolute dollhouse. Now, this was early 90s. It's early 90s. I ended up owning it for about 10 years before I sold it. My aunt still lives there. So these were so nice. They've got nice big patios on the back, front door, back door, just gorgeous properties. So kind of the moral of the story is don't give up. First off, I made a lowball offer. Might have embarrassed myself with it, but I ended up buying the property. Next, it was condemned. Again, another potential death blow. But no, I said, I can go ahead and get through this, and came up ways to overcome that. Then dealing with asbestos and figured out a way to make that economically viable. All these things that turned out, the total property I ended up selling, I want to say it was about $300,000 total, and had my original $90,000 in there, and the rest I used from value creation to do everything. So I'm $210,000 profit overall, just because of working through problems. Again, fixing other people's mistakes. Went ahead and did it. So these are things that you can do. This was an inexpensive property. It was a complete value add, something nobody else wanted and created value in. So this just added another tool to my toolbox. And that was one of the adventures in real estate that I had, that I learned from, made money on, had fun with, and created a lot of value for both me, the city, and even my aunt. So you, if I can do it, you can do it. Have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Real Estate. Please share this information with family and friends so that they too can benefit and learn from Darwin German's experiences. If you are interested in learning more or even becoming a partner or investor with Darwin German, please go to darwingerman.com. Follow your dreams and invest in real estate.